Book 9, Chapter 1. Aeropuerto Internacional Ministro Pistarini Ezeiza. Buenos Aires, Argentina. 0525 hours, 9 September, 2005. Colonel Jacob Taurine, U.S. Air Force, turned from the left seat in the cockpit of Gulfstream 3 N379LT toward Lieutenant Colonel C.G. Castillo, U.S. Army, who was standing in the doorway, and pointed his index finger toward the passenger compartment. Taurine ordered, "Sit." Colonel Castillo complied with the order. Captain Richard M. Sparkman, U.S. Air Force, suppressing a smile, then retarded the throttles a tad, waited 2 seconds more, then greased the aircraft onto the runway. "Nice," Colonel Taurine said to Captain Sparkman over the privacy of the intercom. "Your other option, of course, was coming in hard and or short or long and having Charlie remind you of it for the rest of your natural life. What kind of a pilot is he?" "If you quote me, I will deny it, but he's one of the naturals. Get him to take you for a chopper ride sometime. You'll feel like one of those soaring swallows that fly from Capistrano to Plaza de Mayo here in B.A. "Stupid question, I guess," Sparkman said. "I saw all those DFCs." "Three of them," Taurine said. "Each for doing something with a helicopter that the manufacturer will tell you is aerodynamically impossible." Ezeiza Ground Control directed them to the far left of the terminal building, where ground handlers parked them between two McDonnell Douglas MD-11 cargo aircraft, one belonging to FedEx and the other to Lufthansa, which made the Gulfstream look very small indeed. "Passengers may now feel free to move about the aircraft," Taurine called over the cabin speakers. "Please remember to take your personal items with you. That includes ravenous bears masquerading as lapdogs." Castillo reappeared in the cockpit doorway. "How do you want to handle this, Charlie?" Taurine asked. "Use the valet parking, or have us stick with it and catch up to you later?" "There's nothing on here of interest, except the AFC radios, and we'll take them with us. Let's stick together." "And the weapons?" Taurine argued. "No problem, right, until we try to take them off the airplane? Just leave them." "I will now go deal with the authorities," Taurine said. "When do I tell them we'll need it?" "On an hour's notice," Castillo said. "Remember, we're here to fish," Taurine said. Castillo knew that that had come from Darby when Taurine had radioed him their arrival time at Ezeiza. Darby had said, "The purpose of your visit is sport fishing on the Pilcomayo River." Max took one look at the customs officials at the foot of the stair door and decided he didn't like them. He was, however, now on a leash. Castillo had bought in Quito a hefty woven leather souvenir lariat for that purpose, and thus didn't pose a real problem. Still, the customs officials, smiling nervously, gave Max a wide berth as he towed Castillo to the nose gear. Inside the terminal, when Castillo's group tried to pass through customs and immigration, there was another problem with Max. They were told that the official charged with ensuring that live animals entering the country had the proper documentation, in Max's case, a certificate from a doctor of veterinary medicine stating he had the proper rabies and other inoculations, had not yet come to work. They would have to wait until he showed up. Castillo then saw, at about the same time Delchamp did, the two burly men in civilian clothing leaning against the wall across the baggage carousel from them, trying not to conceal their interest in the newly arrived American sport fishermen. "They might as well have cop tattooed on their foreheads." When Castillo locked eyes with Delchamp, it was obvious they were both wondering if the official who had not yet come to work was really late, or whether this was some kind of stall. Max was not concerned. He had, for some reason, changed his mind and decided he liked the customs officers who wouldn't let him into the country and had offered them his paw. They had responded by offering him a thick rope to tug on, and he now was dragging two of them across the baggage room. Castillo was somewhat concerned that when it came to inspecting their luggage, There might be special interest in the AFC satellite telephones in the suitcases carried by Lester Bradley and Jamie Niedermeyer. There was a cover story ready, of course, that they were ordinary satellite telephones necessary to keep Señor Castillo in touch with the world headquarters of the Lorimer Charitable and Benevolent Fund in Washington, D.C. But that sounded fishy to even Señor Castillo, and there might be problems later if the customs officers decided they had best make a record of the entry of the radios into Argentina so that they would leave the country when Señor Castillo did, and not be sold in Argentina without the appropriate taxes being paid. The problem did not come up. By the time the official charged with making sure Max was healthy showed up a half hour later, Max had so charmed the customs officials, mostly by being stronger than the two of them tugging on the rope, that as soon as the official had stamped his vaccination certificate, they waved them past the luggage X-ray machines and through the doors to the lobby for arriving passengers. There were no familiar faces waiting for them, but Torin nudged Castillo and nodded toward a man waving a sign with Herr Gossinger written on it. Castillo discreetly signaled the others to wait, then walked over to the man. Before Castillo could open his mouth, the man with the sign greeted him in German. Herr Munz welcomes you to Argentina, Herr Gossinger. He awaits you and your party at the estancia. Dankeschön, Castillo replied, and motioned for the others to follow him. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw that the two cops who had been in baggage claim were now in the terminal, and obviously about to follow him and the others wherever they went. The man with the sign led them out of the terminal to a small yellow Mercedes bus with Argentours painted on its doors. As the driver, eyeing Max warily, stuffed their luggage into it and the two cops watched the process, Torin discreetly nudged Castillo again, this time indicating a BMW with ordinary Argentine license plates. Castillo saw Alfredo Munz behind the wheel. Alex Darby, the commercial attaché of the United States Embassy, was sitting next to him. Neither Darby nor Munz gave any sign of recognition. There were two people in the back seat of the BMW whom Castillo couldn't identify. Not surprising. I can barely see Darby and Munz through those darkened windows. But what the hell is this all about? When the yellow Mercedes bus pulled away from the terminal, Munz's BMW followed it, and when they had left the airport property and were on the highway headed toward downtown Buenos Aires, Munz passed the bus and pulled in front. That wasn't surprising either, but a minute or so later, Corporal Lester Bradley made his way with some difficulty through the crowded bus to kneel in the aisle beside Castillo.
Colonel? I may be wrong, but I thought I should bring to your attention the possibility that we're being followed.
Jung heard him. He said, It's those two cop types who are eyeing us in the terminal. Castillo looked out over the luggage stacked in the back of the bus. There behind them were four men in a blue Peugeot sedan. And two of their friends, Castillo said.
What's going on, Colonel?
Jung asked. I think they're friendlies bringing up our rear. Munz and Darby are in that BMW in front of us. As to what's going on, I haven't a clue.